This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building. We're at 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. If you haven't had time to have lunch yet, come on, make your way over to Midtown Cafe, and they have a delicious, I didn't taste it because it's definitely not on my diet, baked potato soup.
I saw that on the menu board outside, yeah.
I know.
I hated to walk by and not have it, but had lunch already.
Yeah, that's probably like my favorite soup.
So it's
off my limits.
It's probably got some bacon in it?
Oh, yeah. It's got bacon cheese. And cream and cheese and,
yeah.
You know, yeah, all that bad stuff for you.
Sure. Just get the paddles out and put it to my chest after a bowl of that. But yum, what a way to go.
I know. Mm-hmm. So I'm instead.
Can I tell everybody what you have?
You can. Sure. Right.
Carol has a small, what would you call it, a tray. And in a little container, she has some chopped watermelon. It appears that she has some cherry-type tomatoes or grape tomatoes.
My favorite tomatoes.
Yeah, they're so good. I also have a couple of cucumbers that are cut up, and then you've got some hummus.
Yeah.
And then you've got a delicious protein shake, which probably is much healthier for you than it looks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ice cream in that.
Mm-mm.
There's no Kahlua in that.
Mm-mm.
All right.
Definitely not. No. I'm just munching away. And yeah, this is a pretty good shake this morning. I usually do the vanilla, but I did chocolate.
Yeah, it looks, does it taste like chocolate?
Mm-hmm. And I added, actually, I got a new yogurt. That's what I like about Yoplait. I do the Yoplait 80-calorie yogurt, and I'll add it to, like, you know, one or two of my shakes throughout the day. And it was, the flavor was Boston cream pie yogurt.
Oh.
Uh-huh. So I think that's adding to the flavor.
Boy, does that sound good.
I'm telling you, it's really good.
What did I have for lunch? I had leftover pizza that I made the other night because I make my own dough, and I make it kind of like 900 degrees, which is the real thin Neapolitan type crust. I got that really figured out. I haven't done the broccoli.
Oh, the cauliflower.
Cauliflower crust again, because that's really hard to do. But I made a margarita pizza. We just slice up hunks of fresh mozzarella and you know, just a little sauce, and then you add the basil leaves at the end once it cools. It is so easy and so good, and you don't feel guilty.
Yeah,
when you're done, eating it, and it does make good leftovers. So throw it in the toaster oven. You know, people put their pizza in the microwave to heat it up. Not good.
Right.
I know it's fast, but put it in someplace that's going to let it
get a little crispy.
Get a little crispy, exactly. So that and a salad. So I'm good to go. My body is ready to, because we got a lot of action coming up today.
We have a lot of action. We will be joined with our every other week segment. MHP Untapped.
Yeah, so that's Michael Hopley Pierce, if you please. But for to shorten things, we're going to call it that, right?
MHP Untapped, yes. I guess that's what everybody calls him, MHP.
Oh, is that right?
That's what they call him.
Cool. Great guy. He knows his stuff.
Beer.
I have a couple things I want to hit him with that I've run across in the beer world over the last week, and we'll have plenty of time to do that.
And he's bringing a friend, too, today.
Oh, he is?
He owns a brewery, Ebenezer.
Oh, great.
And it's their one-year anniversary, I believe. But we'll find out some more details in just a little bit.
That's exciting. Yeah. Also, from a restaurant in Maine, Cape Nettic, right outside of Algonquin, where you were this weekend, and I was as well, although you didn't go to this restaurant, Benjamin Goldman of The Velveteen Habit. How did the restaurant get its name? And it's a pretty interesting history of who was in there before and what they plan to do with it. Raising as much of their own vegetables and produce as they can on property, which more and more places are going that way. But they've got 4 acres, so they've got the room to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I did go to their website and printed off a few things, and quite interesting.
Oh, yeah. They're very interesting people. And that wasn't plan one was not to do it in Maine. They had another location in mind.
Mm.
And we'll get
we'll
Benjamin to
story.
Talk about that.
Cool.
Chef Patrick is turning out to be one of my favorite weekly guests.
Him.
He just has such a great way about him, and man, does he know his food.
He does. Fun talking with him.
Yeah, it really is.
Learned so much. And today's food holiday is German chocolate cake day.
You know, have we had a day yet where you can actually eat
with the
holiday?
Right?
I feel so bad for you.
And this is my favorite thing ever, going to a fair.
Uh-huh.
I probably have it maybe once a year, if I even do, because most of the time when I anticipate it so much, because we usually go to the Hopkinton Fair. And then I just get too guilty. I won't have it. But it's National Cotton Candy Day.
Really? I just never warmed up to cotton candy.
I
don't know why.
Like it.
Hmm.
And it's also National Corn on the Cob Day.
Oh, it is.
It is.
I like corn on the cob.
I love. My mother is a corn on the cob freak.
Is that right?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
So she'll go through 4 or 5 years at a time?
And she sits there. I mean, it's like a joke to watch my mother eating corn on the cob.
That was kind of funny watching you
do that.
I only wish that our listeners could have seen the gestures you were making.
They get it. I'm sure they get
I'm
it.
I'm sure they do.
Do you know how many kernels the average corn on the cob has?
You know, I heard this once, and I know it's not just like, you know, people have 32 teeth. I would say, I'm going to say 330.
No, you're way off.
Am I too low?
There is one piece of silk for each kernel.
Okay, right, because it has to pollinate and make it pregnant and pop up. Okay. All right, so am I too high or too low?
You're too low.
Oh, all right, so let's go with 600.
No, nope, you're still too low.
All right, I give up. I surrender.
800.
800 kernels
800.
On a typical ear of corn.
Yeah.
Wow, way more than I would have thought of.
Corn is an ingredient in more than 3,500 grocery products. That doesn't really surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
yeah.
it's an ingredient in your gas too.
Yeah.
The ethanol.
It's around quite a bit.
Indeed.
There are 5,638 people in the U.S. listed on the white pages with the last name Corn.
Oh, is that right?
That's kind of funny. Imagine Carol Corn. Oh my gosh.
No, you have to
Mike
totally.
Mike Corn.
Avoid.
That's bad.
And then there's the rock band Corn with the backward K.
Oh.
Yeah, but popcorn, you know, that's one of my top 5 favorite foods. And it's healthy. It's good for you.
It is. It is
popcorn. But you know what? I got to do the butter thing. I have to do it with butter.
See, that's how I am, too.
Yeah.
You just got to do some kind of butter or you know, seasonings on it
mm-hmm.
or, you know,
mm-hmm.
something. I like to put a little cayenne pepper on mine, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Kick it up a notch.
Yeah.
Bam!
a little garlic would be good, too, I bet.
Garlic, yeah.
Cinnamon.
As long as your partner likes garlic. Yes, J-Dog?
Cinnamon.
Never did that.
Never did that either.
But Michelle's totally awesome gourmet popcorn. She has tried it all, including some stuff that hasn't worked. Hers is consistently the best.
It is. It's very good.
Of any that
very,
I've
very
had.
Very, very good.
And I know she's hoping to get a new retail spot. Haven't heard yet if that's happening, but so we'll keep on top of that. We need to have her back in as often as possible because she brings bags of popcorn.
That one she brought the...
It wasn't Rocky Road, was it?
I think it was.
It had...
That was ridiculous.
Drizzled with everything. You see, how she gets it, and I don't know enough about chocolate and confections, to not, you know, like get soaked up by the popcorn kernel.
Right.
It's just on there, and the popcorn is still crunchy underneath.
It must be a certain way that they do it, obviously. You know, it is, I know.
Well,
and it doesn't, like, melt together. It's
no,
like, you know, it's
no,
all
I mean, there's
separate.
There's a few, you know, clumps.
A little bit.
But I like the clumps, too.
I do, too.
I hated popcorn balls. Those were, like, the worst things.
Yeah.
I used to make those at Christmas.
Sure.
But, you know, I made these sriracha spicy sweet nuts that I've been, you know. And
how'd
I finally
you do that?
I finally perfected it. Well, with our guest, remember who did this sriracha cookbook?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right,
oh,
Randy.
Yes.
Randy Clements is his name,
yep.
who will be joining us also on a regular basis starting in July.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
So I took the recipe, and it didn't come out spicy enough. And if you recall.
Oh, I remember you saying that. That's right.
And so I said, you know, I gotta ask you. He said, you know what? If there's one recipe I should have changed in the book, that would be it.
That would have been it.
So I doubled it, and then the next time I got something wrong, and so it was like too hot and too sugary. So I finally got it right, but it got me to thinking, speaking of popcorn, that why couldn't I try to apply this recipe to popcorn?
Definitely.
It might be just a little too wet for that, so I need to pick Randy's brain when he joins us here in a few weeks to see how I could maybe reduce it down to make it a little more viscous, a little more syrup-like, so it sticks instead of like it sucks, because popcorn
right.
is so porous, man. It just sucks
It'll
everything
just suck
in.
It up. Yeah.
But if I can get that figured out, man, that's going
to
kill.
Well, I bet you Randy will be able to help you.
I hope so. Randy's a cool guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, we're building
well,
a nice...
Well, anybody's cool if they make a sriracha cookbook.
True. Not one, but 2 sriracha cookbooks.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
But
cool.
How many people have you met that have never heard of sriracha?
Not too many.
Well, I mean, it's not like I've asked 100 people lately, but I would say half the people, and that might be just on a handful of people, maybe 10 or so, half of them never heard of it.
Yeah, I guess. And I think that those are the people that don't do any hot stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be.
And there was, you know, there's my mother can't stand it. You know, I mean, there's
Now,
you
does she like
Mexican, and that then she thinks it's all hot. I'm like, Mom, Mexican
really?
Is not hot.
No, it really is not.
I mean,
if you don't put any hot sauce on it, any salsa,
yeah,
it isn't hot.
Yeah,
we need to get her to Puerto Vallarta.
I know.
We need to tie her down to a chair, and we need to spoon feed her some good Mexican food.
Yeah, exactly.
Without the spicy stuff. Now, I like the spicy stuff, but you know, there's two people in the world: people that like spicy food and people that don't like it.
That is true. Did you know that at Casey's Rib Shack, they have a certain hot sauce for their wings that you have to sign?
No.
I swear to God.
Is it made from ghost peppers, perhaps?
It must be. You know, you have to sign a waiver before you put it on.
All right. So is that just kind of a promotion to kind of build the suspense, like before you go on some ride, you got to sign, you know, liability?
My director of operations, Brian, he loves hot stuff. Yeah. And he did it, and he said, and he's a pretty, you know, big guy, you know, he loves hot stuff.
Yeah.
And he said it was really bad.
So it was not comfortable.
No, not at all.
I wonder how many people actually try that.
I know, we'll have to, you know, that's somebody we got to have back on.
All right,
Kevin.
I can make that happen.
That's a good one.
All right, it's on the list.
He came and delivered to the mayor and didn't really get, you know, too much due time.
So, but I think we would like him to bring his guitar.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Definitely. I think so. That'd be fun.
All right. So if he only brings one thing, either guitar or food?
Well, no, I think he needs to bring both.
Yeah. Well, it's not a good question for you because there's some things that almost everything he makes that you can't have any more than a bite or two of, right?
True. That is. But I'm okay with that. I really am. You know what they have good, too, is their beans. They have good baked beans.
It's interesting. A few days ago when Rocco was here, you were telling us how when you went up to Maine over the weekend, the donut – after a couple bites, didn't do it for you.
Right.
Not because of them, but because your palate is changing. Yep. And the same thing with the lobster Benedict. Lobster Benedict. And so I was listening to Amy Hall, who was filling in for Ken Kale yesterday, and they were talking how you can change your lifestyle, and suddenly foods that you used to love just don't appeal to you after you kind of get them out of your system.
Yep.
I guess, you know, sugar is a top example of that. I've heard more people say that in the last week that you will, if you can just hang in there. You know, go cold turkey. These things that are not good for you will not appeal to you any longer.
I never, ever in my wildest dreams ever thought I'd ever experience that. And it's true. So, listeners, it does work. Believe me.
Well, you've given it a chance. 15 weeks?
15, Mike.
So that's almost a third of a year.
15.
Yeah.
Saturday will be the end of my 15.
That's 105 days. No, it's 85. 105 days. Third of a year. Good for you.
Yeah, happy.
Cool. Hey, I'm ready for some beer talk. What about you,
I'm ready for beer talk, too. I think so. So you're listening to Food for Thought. We're on 107.7 The Pulse. You can also stream us live at WTPLFM.com. It is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And stay tuned. We'll be right back with MHP Untapped.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It is Food for Thought, brought to you on The Pulse WTPL. Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory-smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester. And Grasshopper's Garden Center, where the customer comes first, New River Road in New Boston. A reminder, Sunday is New Hampshire Day at Fenway Park. And, of course, we have these great Pulse tickets to give away, but I believe that the broadcast has been concluded with Peter St. James, where you could get your tickets. So, I will.
Oh, there you go.
Throw that promo sheet away because that is yesterday's news. That is all done. You can tell I'm in a hurry to get to the beer.
Oh, boy. Look at him.
I'm not thinking.
Well, we'd like to welcome on our new every other week segment. And we did, people maybe don't remember, but we did kind of rename it.
We did, indeed.
MHP Untapped.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
I love it. I love it. So, Michael, what's new?
It's a beautiful hot day. It would be a perfect day for drinking beer if it wasn't the middle of the day, I think.
That's when I drink beer. I'm not like a real big beer drinker, but you know, when on like a hot day.
Well, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. That's the thing, Daryl.
He drank the Kool-Aid, didn't he?
I decided that. It would be wonderful to kind of share this opportunity that you guys have been kind enough to give me. And from time to time, I'm going to bring some beery friends in. And so today I brought in Carl Soderberg, co-owner of the Abel Ebenezer Brewing Company in Merrimack.
And you look pretty young.
Thank you.
He's 14.
No, I did just turn 30, so I'm officially an adult.
All right.
Well, it's relative. Wow.
The beer is keeping you looking young.
It's not the beer.
Oh, it's not.
It's a lack of sleep, right?
Yeah, that's probably it.
So when did you, what made you want to open up a brewery of all things?
That goes way back. Back when I was in the Army with my business partner, Mike, we were both 1st Armored Division. We went to our first brew festival right after we got home from overseas in the Middle East up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was a blues and brews festival at a casino, and which that would have gotten me to go right there. But
my kind of guy.
But just being around all the people within the Rocky Mountain region of the country has so many great thriving breweries, from small shops like us to the bigger guys like Left Hand or Sierra Nevada, et cetera. But just the level of community and togetherness that was there around beer and the, I don't know, it seemed like an industry that I really wanted to get into, and that's when I took up home brewing.
So what, you know, and I've never made my own beer. Mike, have you ever made your own beer?
Never have. I must say I'm intrigued by it, though.
We'll have to change
that. I warn
you,
it's a hobby that'll take over your life.
See, that's the problem. I've already got about 3 of those.
I mean, what is the process? Like, okay, so all of a sudden you went to this brew fest and you had this idea that you wanted to homebrew. So where do you start? Like, where does someone start with that? Do you, like, on the internet probably?
Books, the internet, YouTube, talking to people at homebrew shops are very helpful.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're coming in, you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. What should I buy? They'll tell you everything you need to buy. But it is important to note, I mean, it's probably just like cooking. There's a lot of trial and error. I think the difficult part of brewing beer is you have to wait a few weeks to be able to actually try your product to see if you hit exactly what you wanted to do, because the product tastes very different at different stages in the process. And it's post-fermentation, bottling, and conditioning that you actually get to taste that final product and then go back 3, 4, 5 weeks later and start tweaking your recipe.
How was that very first sip that you took of your first batch?
Left something to be desired.
Yeah. Okay.
You're probably really, it was good because you were really proud. My first homebrew, I was really proud, but I knew at the same time that there'd be very few people that I'd really want to share it with because I, you know, but, wasn't that great.
Okay, so when you had that first batch, did you know right then what you needed to do to make the next one better?
You kind of do, but I feel like that comes with trial and error as well. I mean, you start to learn the different ingredients and what type of flavor and characteristics they give to the beer, and then through tweaking the recipe, and then that's probably one of the more time-consuming pieces is when you have your base recipe and you want to start adjusting it. We'll adjust just one ingredient, especially if we're learning with a new ingredient, which is what we did with our double IPA. It took over a year to develop, but just tweaking one ingredient here and there to see what kind of different flavor profiles we get. It can be a challenge.
And you have to wait, again, a couple of weeks once you make that change. So it's like, come on already. You can't do anything instantly, can you?
Yeah, you got to want it.
And that's why note-taking is so key, because if you cook something an hour later, you're going to remember what you did or what you used. But 2 weeks later, if you haven't written it down, at least if you're me, maybe if you're 30, but not if you're me.
Yeah,
me too.
I need to refer to my notes.
I probably would have to make 2 sets of notes because I forget where the first set was.
So Abel Ebenezer, you just have one label, or do you have several variations?
We have several variations. Okay. The company is Abel Ebenezer Brewing, but we make, on Saturday we'll release our 7th brand since opening a year ago, and we distribute 3 across southern New Hampshire.
Hmm. So what's the flagship brew with your?
It's called Burn the Ships. It's a smoked IPA. It's actually poured at Jay's Tavern. It's your number one selling beer, and
that is cool. And listeners, Jay's Tavern is below
that?
The
it is
Red
a
diner.
Well, I always ask for the numbers at all the restaurants we do business at.
Do you?
And,
okay,
yeah,
smart
quality control. it's a smoked IPA, which from what I can find, we're the only commercial brewery in the country that makes a smoked IPA, and it kind of started as a weird garage experiment between Mike and I when we were tinkering around with ingredients that we hadn't used before. And cherrywood smoked malt was an ingredient that I had bought but couldn't find something that I wanted to use it in, so we gave it a shot with the smoked IPA. Versions 1 through 3 weren't really drinkable, Smoked malt is a very powerful, it's a very, very powerful ingredient. A little bit goes a long way, but finding a unique balance, I mean, there's four different types of hops that go into that beer, and we found that the smoked malt, in conjunction with the caramel malts, added a really unique balance. And when we came to market, we brought it to market only because we loved it. We really didn't think that it would take off to be the most...
You thought Auburn would be your flagship, didn't you?
I really did, because it had a wider appeal. It was a lower alcohol by volume beer. Red ales are kind of a dying art right now, so we thought we had found a niche there, and it's much cheaper to make. Burn the Ships is not a cheap beer to make at all. So we thought, it's too expensive, it's too niche, we'll just serve it in the brewery. But then restaurant owners that we were started doing business with were coming in and trying it and saying, why didn't you bring me a sample of this? I love this. I want to buy this. And right now, out of the 42 restaurants we do business with, 33 of them pour Burn the Ships. So it is by far...
Burn the Ships.
Who knew, huh?
Well, why don't you... This is a really awesome... All of their beer titles have awesome stories. Why don't you tell us a story behind that?
Burn the Ships is a... it's a mantra and a military tactic. There's a number of stories throughout history of military commanders when they landed on the beaches against formidable odds. They would order their men to burn their ships... as a motivational tool. And a lot of times when these leaders were questioned of like, well, how are we supposed to go home if we burn our ships? And the leaders would always say, we're going to go home in their ships. So it became, for us when we were, those are stories they taught us when I was in officer training at Fort Benning. And it became a running joke for Mike and I when we were opening the brewery. I mean, he moved out here from Southern California. I quit my job. We leveraged basically everything we owned to open the brewery, and the running joke was we were burning all of our metaphorical ships. Failure was not an option. So when the smoked IPA, we opened a bottle and tried it, and we're like, we have to bring this to market. It immediately light bulb was, we have to call it Burn the Ships.
That is
so
cool.
How many entrepreneurs basically do what you did, and that's leverage everything? You're all in.
Well, you kind of have to.
Yeah, I mean, well, because who's going to give you a loan, right? Did you have any commercial loans?
We did. But I have a feeling the reason why was because we showed that we were willing to put everything forward to make it happen.
As collateral.
We had put quite a bit of money together ourselves. So that in conjunction with, you know, our tenacity, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell, we only got told no by two banks. And I just kind of got to the point where it was like, this brewery is going to happen. And it's just a question of whether or not you're coming along for the ride.
That's good. They like that kind of talk.
Yes,
I would
bet
guess.
They do.
It was fun.
Yeah. All right. So the name Abel Ebenezer. Is that what's the origin?
There's
of
a
that?
Story behind that as well. We like Mike said, we like putting stories behind all the brands of the beer. I mean, that's what people do when they drink beer together. It's a very communal beverage. People like to sit around and tell stories, whether it's a story that happened last night or a story that happened a couple hundred years ago, which is the story of Abel Ebenezer. It's a we wanted to name the company something local that had some depth to it. And this story is of Ebenezer Mudgett and the Pine Tree Riot of 1772. It was a piece of pre-Revolutionary War history that happened just west of Manchester. And it was actually one of the first physical oppositions to the British regarding New Hampshire's pine trees, which was our largest resource at the time. The pine tree subsequently, because of the Pine Tree Riots, became a symbol for militiamen across New England. If you look up Revolutionary War flags, you'll see a number of them from New England have pine trees on them, and most people don't know why. And it's because of the Pine Tree Riots that Ebenezer Mudgett led in 1772. The main battle flag at Bunker Hill was actually the flag of New England, which is a pine tree flag.
So, and that was because the king pretty much said that trees over, was it 10 inches?
12 inches in diameter, trees on your property ceased to be your property because England at the time had the largest merchant and naval force in the world, and after completely deforesting their entire continent, they started raiding the colonies. So loggers and mill owners were basically told, any trees beyond this diameter, you're not allowed to sell. You just turn them over to the crown.
That's a great story.
It is.
How many other name choices were you mulling over, or was that it right from the very start?
That was kind of it from the start. picking out names is kind of a, people ask us if we have like naming meetings and we really don't.
It's I was thinking of you guys sitting like around a fire, drinking your, beer, and they just kind of come to us.
I mean, people, when we come up with beer names, it's, or the name for the brewery, it's just something that hits us in the moment. We're like, all right, that's it. Let's just run with it. Because I was a little nervous coming to market with a company called Abel Ebenezer, and our logo has a pine tree on it. I was afraid too many people were going to make a Christmas association with it. But I think we did a pretty good job of separating it out and making it very local and emphasizing the history. They just kind of come to us.
Is a story on the label in any like short form so people can appreciate it?
Well, we don't have any labels. All of our beer is kegged. We don't do any bottling or canning.
Okay.
So everything's either poured at our facility or at the 42 local restaurants.
Is that going to change?
When I have the money to do it.
Oh, okay.
Canning lines are very expensive.
You can get growlers on location at the brewery, though. And you guys are open 5 days a week for growler fills?
We're open every day, 4 to 8 on the weekdays and 12 to 8 on the weekends.
And where are you located?
Down in Merrimack on Columbia Circle, which is right off exit 11. So we're right on the high ground overlooking the DW Highway.
Oh, very cool. Is that like just starting a house or is it a retail space?
We have a bar on premises at the brewery. That's when we first opened, we were only open 4 days a week. But very quickly, the people of Merrimack demanded we be open 7 days a week.
We
do open mic nights on Monday nights. We have live local music.
Right at your brewery.
Correct. Oh, wow. It's not a big bar, but we have we just got our outdoor seating, and you know, we get the after work crowd, and on weekends we get a lot of the tourists and just people who live and work in the Merrimack area.
Do you spend most of your time making beer or selling it?
Selling it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making beer is a very small piece of operating
it
a
is.
Brewery. I think cleaning is a much bigger piece than making
that's
beer.
That's what most of brewing is cleaning.
And that's the back end side. But
all right,
Carl's
I don't want this hobby now.
Carl's been amazing as far as getting the brand out even before there was more than a brand to get out. And I actually met him through Merrimack Chamber and then through B&I before he had beer to sell because he was laying the groundwork for his campaign in true military fashion.
They call it prepping the battlefield.
Is that it?
it's been a wild ride. And I do really appreciate all of Mike's help. I love doing the tap handle show, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, we should mention that.
It's
something you can find online, and how do they get to that?
You can either go to www.thetaphandleshow.com, or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher, or there's a lot of other clearinghouses for podcasts that have picked us up, and I don't even know about it because it's free content, so kind of anybody can, as long as they don't alter it, they can further it on through their own website.
Is there a way to count audience size?
Yeah, because everything comes through. We upload to one centralized sort of a clearinghouse site called Libsyn, Liberated Syndication, and everybody that gets it, with the exception of IPMNation.com, everything comes through that portal. So we can actually track it down to the time and the zip code. So when my friend in Denmark listened to one of our episode ones right after we launched, I said, that's my buddy in Denmark. I know where that came from. So we have actually more access to metrics than I generally take advantage
How
of.
How gratifying that must have been.
It's really, and you can see the pockets. You can see the pockets around the Bay Area and California where I grew up, and you can see the pockets around New Hampshire and then a couple of other places where I have friends. You know, you can also see where their downloads are as well. Now we're at a point where we get several thousand downloads per episode, so it's a little more difficult to pick out the discrete downloads.
Right.
But yeah, we can still track all of that stuff. And the truth is, as long as my message is getting out, I'm not looking to get rich on it. If we're going to make any money on it, it's through sponsorship. Mm-hmm. And we have amazing sponsors, but that was really not the goal. That was just a sort of...
You still have a day job.
I do. Yeah. I do, absolutely. I have a day job, as well as starting up a commercial brewery, as well as co-hosting a podcast.
So we need to take a break after next question.
I was just going to say, you got to get hooked up with David Page.
Okay.
He's going to come and do a... Beer Geeks TV show with you guys. I mean, that would be so cool. Very,
absolutely.
Very cool.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
You are listening to Food for Thought. We are in studio with our every other week segment, MHP Untapped, and he brought with him today the one of the owners of Abel Ebenezer Brewing Company. And stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7. The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike on this beautiful Thursday. almost ready for the weekend, and I think it's going to be beautiful all weekend, too. It's supposed to be sunny and warm and all that. Nice beer-drinking weather, I think.
Indeed. I already have some plans on drinking some beer this weekend. In fact, I think I'm going to drink some Abel Ebenezer Victory Nor Defeat, brand-new double IPA, which will be premiering at their second-year launch, not their one-year anniversary, because they're not looking back, they're looking forward. So it's their second-year launch.
I made that very clear.
I like that.
And that will be at the brewery from 12 to 8 this Saturday.
Very good.
And that's, give us the address again, would you, Carl?
It's 31 Columbia Circle in Merrimack. It's right off exit 11.
Right off exit 11. Okay.
Yep. Just put it.
Just look for the cars. I bet there'll probably be a crowd there.
Yeah, we've had to partner with all the neighboring businesses to make sure we can use their parking on Saturday.
What did you have, like 400 people for your grand opening last year?
Oh, we had well over 1,000 for the grand opening.
Stop. Really?
Yeah.
The governor cut the ribbon.
Awesome.
Oh, we didn't do a ribbon cutting. We did a bottle break.
That's right.
There you go.
The chamber wanted to do a ribbon cutting. I wanted to break beer bottles over the side of the building, like casting a ship off.
There you go. Cool.
This year we're going to be cutting a cake, like a one-year anniversary cake.
And the governor's going to jump out of the cake, actually. Yeah. It's going to be something different.
Hey, I have to ask Michael a question here. Talk to me about the controversy of breakfast stout.
So,
right? Oh, describe the bottle.
Well,
label
okay.
First.
So the bottle has a picture of a baby close up from about forehead to the bottom of the baby apron with a bowl of oatmeal in front of it, about to put this spoon of oatmeal breakfast cereal up to its mouth. And it's a stout that's made with oatmeal, and it's available in I don't know how many states. It's available in New Hampshire on draft, but they have to use a special tap handle. And you can't sell bottles in New Hampshire because it's got a picture of a baby on the label. And so, of course, we all know that that's going to make a nine-month-old baby want to go to the liquor store and pick up a six-pack and overindulge and drive home.
What upsets me about that is that it passed the House and the Senate, and then
the governor said it was
vetoed it.
Yeah.
I don't understand why.
But it's okay to have a glass bottle of vodka that's shaped like a machine gun for sale in the state liquor store,
because
that doesn't have any implications.
Fruit Loops vodka or chocolate milk liqueur. I mean,
Fruit Loops vodka.
Oh yeah.
Oh god, I knew they had all kinds of crazy
flavors. Well, but
there's no
baby pictures on that. I mean, I think that's, you know.
Come on, really? Like, what do you really see as the efficacy of that? What is that going to cause to happen that you are so afraid of?
So, where are these people from? The brewers or the bottlers?
Founders. They're out of
Michigan.
Michigan, yeah, great Grand Rapids. And they're a big brewery. They they like a kind of brewery that finishes an expansion and has already outgrown it by the time they cut the ribbon. The last two expansions they've had, and I don't remember the numbers, but it was in the hundreds of thousands of barrels, and a barrel's 31 gallons.
All right, another quick question for you. Have you heard of the product Fizzics?
I have.
F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S,
yeah.
I think. Chronicle did a piece on it the other night. It looks like it somehow enhances some aspects of beer taste.
Beer? Oh.
Yeah,
and it's a local guy, and he made a ton of money crowdsourcing.
I didn't know it was a local product.
So
essentially it'll take a can or a bottle of beer, and it will enable you to dispense it and get a dispensed product that is more similar to an on-tap product.
Seems like it adds more carbonation or something along those lines.
It protects the carbonation that's already in solution, because of the act of cracking and then pouring the product.
You lose some of
it. A lot of the CO2 comes out of solution. So.
Well, we've all heard about crowdsourcing crowdfunding and all that stuff. He was, I think, looking to raise $50,000. Now, I haven't looked for a day or two. He was up at over about $140,000 with over 1,000 people contributing an average of $134.
And I think, as having somebody who just finished a crowdfunding account, I think you do much better if you actually can give an advanced buy on a product than if you can just look for support.
Well, they're doing that. You've got different levels of contributions will get you certain things, certain spiffs or whatever, including, I think, a really good price on the machine when the prototype is finally mass-produced and available on the market. But if you want to find out more, check out Chronicle. They did an episode of a Channel 9 going on Shark.
Oh.
All right. That's cool.
Wow.
That's good.
Larry
Bartlett
knows him.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to see if I can get him on the podcast. We looked at a news item about one, but I haven't obviously got my hands on one to review it on the podcast. But I'd certainly like to find out more about it.
So something you add to the beer?
No, it's like a tabletop device that you put the package in.
Looks like a Keurig machine, actually.
And you dispense a pint out of it. So you put a can or a bottle in, and you close it, and then you do whatever you do to dispense the beer.
And visually, you can see the difference when they take it out compared to the same product in a glass that hasn't been treated.
I guess if I was somebody that didn't have a three-tap kegerator at home, that might be more of an attractive option for me. But I do still drink plenty of packaged product, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I have a question for you, Carl. When you go out to, a pub, what is your beer of choice if your beer is not available? What do you...
He leaves.
You want me to be honest? Budweiser.
Really?
So that you can appreciate your beer the next time you have it more?
Well, I like to support the other brewery in town.
The smaller one, right?
They do need your help, yeah.
No, we...
Those Clydesdales look hungry.
We actually, we're on very good terms with the Anheuser-Busch facility down the street. We go out for beers every so often with
Well,
Otto,
now you are.
With
until
Otto,
you start getting into their pants.
No.
See,
then they'll just buy him.
Honestly, yeah. The people who work there, I mean, I know Anheuser-Busch is a very large corporation, and they kind of have a reputation in the industry, but the people who work there, they just love great beer. We've gone out for beers, and...
I was afraid to say that's what I drank on a nice hot summer day.
No!
I wasn't going to say that.
All right.
Food for Thought, we'll be back. Stay tuned.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.